This is WCCO's Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett.
Good morning, and thanks for joining us. A chilly June day, but it looks like it'll turn out pretty nice later in the day with highs in the 60s. Great to be back in studio. Great to see Tom Schroyer again. Tom, how have you been?
Steve, I've been great. Thanks, and great to have you back on the show here. We had a really terrific program last week with Cindy Ackerman, as you may know, and so we're excited to be back in the routine here at 11 o'clock in the morning on Saturdays here following our move here a few weeks ago to this new time slot. So we're keen to move forward with our program here today. I'm joined in a studio by Kevin Bush, who is, as we like to say, a lawyer's lawyer with Moss and Barnett, also serving as our law firm's chief operating officer. And our guest, Kevin and I, are here to present a co-host, I guess would be the way to say it, our very, very special guest, really a legend of Minnesota law and a really dedicated and loyal servant to the entire state of Minnesota and indeed to the profession of law nationwide, and that is University of Minnesota Law School Dean Robert Stein. Good morning, Dean.
Well, good morning, Tom and Kevin. It's a pleasure to be with you.
I understand you're quite a longtime fan of WCCO Radio, having graduated from South High School and attended the University of Minnesota as an undergrad and then graduating law school there as well.
I grew up with CCO. I did graduate from South High and taught at the University of Minnesota for about 30 years, was vice president for a while and dean of the law school for 15 of those years. Went away to Chicago and D.C. to head the American Bar Association for a dozen years. And now I'm back teaching law at the University of Minnesota, and I'm able to listen to CCO once again.
Well, that's great. We're thrilled that you're back in our community as well after your 12-year stint with the American Bar Association. We'll come back to talk about that in a bit. Also, we know that you're serving of counsel with the Minneapolis law firm of Gray Plant Moody, in addition to teaching as the Everett Fraser Professor of Law at the University of Minnesota Law School. And, Steve, I might point out that Dean Stein not only graduated from Minnesota Law School. He graduated as the number one student in his class with a very rare award of summa cum laude. So quite a luminous academic and educational background for Dean Stein. So we're going to talk today about another one of Dean Stein's many, many contributions to our state and indeed to our entire country. He is currently the president of the National Conference of Commissioners on Uniform State Laws, often called the Uniform Law Commission. And Dean Stein, this is a little known outside the legal community commission, but it serves a huge purpose.
That's right, Tom. In order for state law to be effective in many areas, the laws must be uniform from state to state, so it doesn't change as you cross a border. Probably the best example of that would be commercial law, and Kevin has worked very hard in the commercial law area, but the Uniform Commercial Code controls all sales and checking, banking activity, and that's state law that does it. And in order for that to be effective, the states must have a uniform law, and the Uniform Law Commission is the organization that drafts and promotes enactment of those laws.
I wonder if you could give us a little bit of a history in a few seconds about the Uniform Law Commission.
Yeah, I'll try to just give a thumbnail, but review. The issue of uniformity of state law goes way back to our pre-constitutional days. One of the calls for what became the Constitutional Convention was to make uniform the law between the 13 colonies. And, of course, the federal law that emerged from the Constitution made a uniform law in the federal courts. But the problem of lack of uniformity in the state courts continued to be a problem. There were repeated calls, conferences to do something about it. The reason the American Bar Association was formed was a call to make uniform the law of the states, and it was one of the first two committees the ABA formed when it was created in 1878. And then finally, in 1892, the Uniform Law Commission was spun off, and every state has representatives in the Uniform Law Commission. There are 53 jurisdictions, the 50 states, the District of Columbia, the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico and the territory of the Virgin Islands.
Well, Dean Stein, it does seem a little odd that the that we would have a national commission set up through the states to adopt uniform laws that the states, each of them, could enact to ensure that we have, for example, a common set of laws governing the commercial life in our country and other aspects of our laws, when it would seem to me to be much easier just to go to Congress and ask for Congress to enact a law that covers the whole United States.
Well, Tom, you put your finger on really one of the key issues here. It's very easy to bring matters to Congress, but our nation was founded on federalism, a combination of states and federal law. And I think the Uniform Law Commission is essential to maintaining that balance, to promote the importance of state law. As we have issues and crises in our country, there is a tendency to go to Congress and say we need to fix that. And if that happens, it moves matters into federal courts. We do have federal courts with very large agendas and jurisdiction. But many feel it's important for states to continue to have a vital role in our nation. It's the laboratory where new ideas emerge, where the government is closest to the people. And in order for state law to be effective in many areas, for example, child support is a good example of it, it's critical that we have a uniform law from state to state. So state law is a viable alternative to federal preemption.
I think I neglected to mention that Dean Stein is the current president of the Uniform Law Commission, serving a two-year term, and I understand you're a life member as well.
Yes, I was appointed commissioner way back in the 1970s, so I've represented Minnesota for more than 30 years in the conference. In Minnesota, the commissioners are appointed by the three-way appointment by the governor, the attorney general, and the chief justice of the Supreme Court. And Tom, if I might, I just like to mention the other commissioners from Minnesota.
Oh, sure.
Very proud of the group. I think Minnesota can be very pleased. The others are Judge Jack Davies, retired Court of Appeals judge. Dean Harry Hainsworth, who was dean of William Mitchell College of Law, Gene Henning, attorney practicing in Minneapolis, Judge Harriet Lansing, who just stepped down as a court judge on the Minnesota Court of Appeals, Michael Sullivan, who was the CEO of International Dairy Queen, Bob Tennyson, attorney in Minneapolis, the current reviser of statutes in Minnesota, Michelle Timmons, and Harry Walsh, the former reviser of statutes in the state, in addition to myself.
Now, are each of these commissioners appointed by, in an official capacity, by this combination of the governor, the attorney general, and the state Supreme Court chief justice?
Yes, each one is appointed in that manner. The state law of Minnesota provides for four commissioners. But you heard me mention nine, and if a commissioner serves for 20 years, the commissioner becomes what's called a life member, as you referred to earlier, and continues in the Uniform Law Commission, but a new person can be appointed to the active slot to replace that individual. Harriet Lansing should be further mentioned, will become national president of the organization in 2013, and it's quite remarkable that one state would have two presidents in such a short time. I think it's only happened once before in the 120-year history of the organization. So it's a real tribute to, I think, Minnesota and the stature in which it's held in the conference, and also to Judge Lansing that she will be a future president.
We're really excited for her appointment coming up, and we appreciate all of the service that you and the other life commissioners on the Uniform Law Commission provide, because we know they serve without compensation.
We have more on the way. Once again, Dean Robert A. Stein in studio today. Of course, Tom Schroyer, Kevin Bush in studio as well. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, each and every Saturday at 11 a.m. here on News Radio 830 WCCO. By the way, for more information on today's program and all our other programs, go online, the website, moss-barnett.com. Here on News Radio 830 WCCO.
This is Sidebar on Minnesota Law.
You can't handle the truth.
Excuse me, Your Honor. Two youths.
Are you sure this is legal?
You think you know every trick in the book, and they come up with another one.
Did you know that in 1955, Moss and Barnett attorney Abbott Fletcher registered a symbol first used in 1934 that was to become the most widely known logo in the entire healthcare industry, namely the Blue Cross.
Minnesota Law is presented by Moss and Barnett and returns in a moment on News Radio 830 WCCO.
It is Minnesota Law each and every Saturday now at 11 a.m. here on News Radio 830 WCCO. And we have a very distinguished guest in studio. Once again, a professor of law at the University of Minnesota, former University of Minnesota Law School Dean Robert A. Stein in studio. Tom Schroyer, Kevin Bush as well. And learning so much on the program, I guess up front I had a bit of a question about uniform laws because each individual state has so many unique laws. Is this a conduit between the states trying to tie child support laws, for instance, from Minnesota to Wisconsin, where it's probably almost impossible to make sure that every law is identical? Does it help states work together? Is conduit a way to look at it?
I think that is a good way, Steve. Certainly states have a lot of laws that are unique to their jurisdiction. But in a variety of areas, it's important that the law be consistent. And so there are some 200 uniform laws that have been promulgated and widely adopted in the various states. So each year, the Uniform Law Commission brings in about 4 to 5, 6 uniform laws into each of the jurisdictions. And Minnesota is one of the states that has been quite successful in adopting uniform laws.
Dean Stein, we were wanting to talk a little bit, too, about some of the more notable accomplishments of the Uniform Law Commission in terms of establishing laws that became not only uniform, but the backbone of various areas of the law. And I know we've had Kevin Bush on to talk about the Uniform Commercial Code. Does that rank as the leading uniform law that the commission might have had a role in adopting?
I think we'd have to describe the Uniform Commercial Code as the crown jewels of the Uniform Law Commission. There were efforts to try to get uniform laws for 50 years or so after the Uniform Law Commission was created. And then in the 1950s, the UCC was promulgated. For a long time, it didn't get adopted. When I went to law school, it hadn't been adopted in all the states. But then it rapidly was adopted, and it totally controls commercial law. And it's updated from time to time. In fact, even in this year, the Minnesota legislature adopted revisions to one of the articles of the UCC.
I know other big laws that the Uniform Law Commission has adopted and have been really quite remarkably effective, the Uniform Probate Act, the Uniform Trade Secrets Act, the Uniform Enforcement of Judgments Act, and the list goes on and on.
Yeah, you're certainly true. The Uniform Probate Code has completely revolutionized the probate law of the United States. The concept was, instead of making it a very laborious and expensive process when someone dies, to go through all sorts of hoops to make sure there are no problems, the UPC, Uniform Probate Code, has a streamlined process, but there's a possibility to have a hearing if there's any problem in a particular state.
Might also note for our listeners, Steve, that Dean Stein is the author of the leading treatise on the Uniform Probate Code that's been in publication, as I understand it, since the mid-1970s.
That's correct.
So quite a contribution to scholarship there. I know Kevin wanted to point out something about the UCC or the Uniform Law Commission that I thought was very interesting.
Dean, how much of an international component is there to your work? Do you see foreign countries coming here asking for help from the Uniform Laws Commission, and do you look to foreign countries for ideas and what to adopt here?
It's thank you, Kevin. It's a strong interest of the organization and certainly of mine. We have formed an agreement with the NAFTA countries, Canada and Mexico, to jointly develop some laws and having joint drafting projects. We had one on nonprofit organizations and their consequences. There's the Uniform Law Group in Canada is now adopting a law relating to spousal abuse that could be enforced in surrounding provinces, and they've asked to have us participate so that abusers could be tracked down if they crossed the border and came to the United States. So that's one way it's happening. The other way is our State Department has recently, in the last 25 years, begun negotiating private law treaties, private law meaning the law that applies to individuals. And it may have to do with enforcement of child support orders, may have to do with electronic signatures on contracts. And traditionally, treaties are implemented by federal law, but we've been working with the State Department to have these international treaties implemented by uniform state laws so that we don't sort of sweep out whole areas of traditional state law like family law and have family law lawyers go to the federal courts.
We have more on the way. A fascinating program today on Minnesota Law. Once again, former University of Minnesota Law School Dean Robert A. Stein joining us. Of course, Tom Scheuer, Kevin Bush in studio today. We're talking about the Uniform Law Commission. It's all continuing in a moment here on News Radio 830 WCCO.
Live from the Buick Studios, this is News Radio 830 WCCO.
Welcome back. It is Minnesota Law presented by Moss and Burnett. Remember, we're at our new time, Saturdays between 11 and noon, after 3 years at noon. So we've moved up an hour on Saturday mornings here at News Radio 830 WCCO. By the way, for more info on today's program and all other programs, go online, the website, moss-burnett.com. Tom Scheuer in studio, Kevin Bush, and our guest, former University of Minnesota Law School Dean Robert A. Stein, continues to teach law at the University of Minnesota, very active in the practice of law. We're learning more about the Uniform Law Commission. Tom?
Right, Steve. Dean Stein is currently the president of the Uniform Law Commission, and we wanted to let our audience know about this very important and very little known body of law in the United States that has a long history of working to pass, draft, and then work to pass laws that govern very important areas on a uniform basis between and among all of the states. And Dean Stein, of course, nowadays transparency is all the rage, but the Uniform Law Commission has been fully transparent from the start, virtually.
Absolutely, Tom. It's been a hallmark of the process. There are about 300 commissioners from the 53 jurisdictions. And when the executive committee decides to undertake an act in a particular area, we appoint a drafting committee of about 10 commissioners, try to get a variety of views represented. And then we invite organizations, we call them stakeholders, that have an interest in that subject to be observers to the project. So depending on the subject matter, we could have 20 or more people in the room. The drafting committees meet twice a year, once in the fall, once in the spring. They read their product the first time at an annual meeting of the conference. Then they meet in the fall and the spring in the second year and read the revised product the second time. So every act has a minimum of four drafting meetings. But it's an amazing process. We literally read word for word, and it's amazing. You can have talked about something for many, many times, and just reading it through again, someone will say, what does that mean?" and bring up issues, so that the process produces some of the finest drafting of legislation in the country.
But you know, I'm sitting here thinking, wait a minute, we have over 300 lawyers sitting around talking about how to wordsmith important legislation and then trying to get that through the states. How is it that everything comes together to produce something, especially as we see in an era as we do now where it's so very, very difficult to get our governmental leaders to agree on much?
Well, I think one of the critical elements is mutual respect. We really don't condone any personal attacks of any kind in our legislative deliberations. At the annual meetings, it's very much like a Congress. The commissioners sit at a table behind a placard that has the name of their state, so there'll be a Minnesota delegation there. And we meet, he said, as a committee of the whole, where each commissioner can get up and make comments. But we work very hard at maintaining mutual respect. And one of the things we do is not, it's a rule of procedure that we don't single out any individuals for honor during this. It's a process and not individual achievements that are recognized.
You might mention how much the commissioners get paid for all of this work.
As Tom mentioned briefly, I'm glad you came back to that, Kevin. The commissioners receive no compensation for this at all. We do get our expenses of travel to the meetings reimbursed out of dues that each of the states pays. But all of these meetings that I described, people are sacrificing their days and weekends to. The drafting meetings usually are Friday to Sunday. I would say they're about a third or more of the weekends during the year. So as president of this organization, I've had about a third or more of my weekends for the last 4 years occupied by going to these meetings where we draft the acts. But we do it because we believe in it. Most of us care very much about the law, and in fact, all of us care very much about the law, and this is an effort to make it better.
Dean Stein, if I may ask, what in an era of budget consciousness, what is Minnesota's share of the dues for this organization?
The dues are determined by a formula that relates to the population of the state, and Minnesota's dues roughly in the $50,000 a year range.
We have more on the way. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. Once again in the spotlight, the Uniform Law Commission, former University of Minnesota Law School Dean Robert A. Stein, and president of the body that deals with uniform law, will return in a moment. Tom Schreier, Kevin Bush in studio as well. And News Radio 830 WCCO.
This is Sidebar on Minnesota Law.
You can't handle the truth.
Excuse me, Your Honor. Two youths.
Are you sure this is legal?
You think you know every trick in the book, and they come up with another one.
Did you know Moss and Barnett attorney G. Aaron Youngquist was the lead trial attorney in the successful prosecution of Al Scarface Capone and then personally argued the tax evasion conviction to the U.S. Supreme Court?
Minnesota Law is presented by Moss and Barnett and returns in a moment on News Radio 830 WCCO.
From the Buick Studios, this is News Radio 830 WCCO.
Welcome back. It is Minnesota Law, Saturdays at 11 a.m. Robert A. Stein in studio talking about the Uniform Law Commission. Tom Schroyer is our host. Kevin Bush in studio as well, and he's been joining us from time to time to talk about the Uniform Commercial Code. Tom?
Thank you, Steve. Dean Stein, we are close to the end of the program. We wanted to talk about what's on the agenda for the Uniform Law Commission at the present time, and I must say I find it to be just so fascinating how down the road your group is looking and how what important issues you're tackling.
Well, we work hard at trying to come up with issues that are the major issues that should be addressed. We receive about 40, 50 suggestions each year, and then we have a committee we call our Scope and Program Committee that reviews them and sets up a study committee on several, and that's how we decide to proceed.
I know looking ahead to the next presidential election, you're actually going to be considering, and maybe tell us what's afoot with the legislation, the Uniform Law to govern presidential electors.
Right. That was a very interesting one to work on. Under the Constitution, election law, even for federal officials, including the president, is state law. You may remember that was the issue in Bush versus Gore back in 2000. And the presidential electors law deals with what happens when an elector who's pledged to vote for one candidate, for whatever reason, votes for another. Currently, about 25 states have some law on this, varying from it's a misdemeanor, so the elector would pay a fine, but it could affect the president of the United States, or some other approach. The uniform law that we are just approved this last year and is being promulgated would set up a process by which the elector would tentatively cast the vote, and if they violated their pledge, they would be replaced by someone else pledged to that particular candidate. So the intentions of the voters would be respected.
I know you're also working on an important affordable housing issue.
Yes, we've just begun in the past year a Unified Manufactured Housing Act. Currently, manufactured housing accounts for a large share of the housing in this country, this is housing which formerly was called mobile homes, now has a very technical meaning that's brought to a site and placed on a foundation and attached to utilities. Some states treat this as personal property, some as real property. There's just a variety of ways in which it's legally viewed. And so our Uniform Act would create a uniform way of regarding this housing so that capital that flows into the area and mortgages that are issued with respect to purchasers could be securitized, resold in the securities market, and bring a great deal more capital into this area that represents housing for many, many Americans and many lower-income Americans.
And finally, I know it's so abhorrent that we have this, but you're dealing with the very serious issue of human trafficking and sex slavery.
Yes, it's a shame and an embarrassment to a civilized society that human trafficking occurs on the scale that it does at the present time. It's something that we tend not to pay enough attention to as young women, and in some cases men, but mostly young women, are brought into other countries for sexual service. And are basically slaves. They don't have a passport, and they're moved around from location to location. There is a federal law on this subject, but it needs to be connected with the state law on how offenses of this type are treated. And so we are just undertaking a project. It's literally beginning this summer. And the chair of that group will be recently retired justice on the Utah Supreme Court. And so under our usual process, we'll be meeting for 2 years and have a uniform act that we hope will be widely adopted that will help to address this horrendous problem.
How long does it take on average or in a typical case for one of these new uniform laws to be, first of all, proposed, then drafted, and then in turn, if it's successful, enacted by enough states for it to have an effect?
Well, it is a little bit of a lengthy process, and some have criticized it for taking this time. But, of course, the time produces a very quality result. But if an act is proposed, I mentioned the scope and program review, and a study committee might take a year, then there will be 2 years of drafting, and then it's promulgated for enactment. Some acts are enacted very quickly. In fact, UCC acts are adopted quite quickly. Some others take a number of years, but we hope in a space of 3 to 4 years the act will be widely adopted in the country.
And who pushes the legislation, introduces it at the state level, and then works to get it passed typically?
That's the responsibility of the Uniform Law Commissioner. So we don't just draft the laws. We work with the legislature in each state and the Bar Association. In Minnesota, the Bar Association has been enormously helpful in setting up committees to review the act and then supporting it at the legislature.
And are most of these recommendations adopted in all 53 jurisdictions? What's the batting average, so to speak?
I wish that were so, Steve. Some are widely adopted,
sure,
and unanimously adopted, but there are many that get up to the 30-state level or so, and that's where it stays. We keep working on it, but we have what we call a target list so that we can focus our energies, and I would say an act stays on the target list for about 5 years max, and then again, sometimes, lo and behold, a state that hasn't adopted something for 10 years, that you see they've suddenly come around to adopt it.
All right, we have one more segment to go. Once again, Robert Haystein, the Uniform Law Commission, in the spotlight today. Tom Schroyer, Kevin Bush in studio. Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. Welcome back one more time. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, Saturday mornings at 11 a.m. Tom Schroyer, Kevin Bush, hosting Dean Robert A. Smith on the Uniform Law Commission. One more time, Tom.
Thanks, Steve. We're here with Dean Robert Stein, as mentioned, still active at the University of Minnesota as a professor, teaching law students. And Dean Stein, in addition to your many years of unbelievably dedicated and excellent service to the University of Minnesota, you also served as the CEO and the COO of the American Bar Association for the 12 years from 1994 to 2006. And we wanted to talk briefly with you about that as well. What is the American Bar Association, and what do they do?
Well, Tom, as you know, it's a large organization, the largest professional membership organization in the world, of 400,000 lawyers and members. It's an organization that involves so many different activities that people and lawyers can join and be involved in a variety of ways. But some of its principal activities are developing a code of ethics for lawyers. There is a model code of professional responsibility which the ABA develops, and then it's put out to the states, and each of the states has adopted it very close to the form in which the ABA has promulgated it. Another major area is accrediting law schools, and in each state, a graduate of an ABA-approved law school can take the bar exam in a state. And so it's very important for a law school to receive ABA accreditation. In fact, it's necessary to have that accreditation in order for the federal student loans to be applied. It's the Department of Education recognizes the ABA for that purpose. And so all of our four law schools in the Twin Cities are ABA-approved law schools: the University of Minnesota, the William Mitchell College of Law, the Hamline Law School, and the St. Thomas Law School. And another area, just to touch on what are hundreds of areas, another significant area has to do with evaluating judicial nominees. When the president names someone to go to the court, the ABA evaluates that nominee.
It's been a fast-moving show today, and I've learned a lot. Pleasure to meet you. Bob, it was great.
Steve, it's good to meet you.
Yes, Tom Schroyer, Kevin Bush. The hour went by so quickly.
Steve, we want to thank Dean Robert Stein so much for being with us and also for all of his service to our great state and the University of Minnesota. You really have made our state the Northern Star and the University of Minnesota a beacon for the entire country. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Tom.
Minnesota Law back next week at 11 here on News Radio 830 WCCO.